Welcome to episode 169 of George's Random Astronomical Object. Every episode, I run a random number generator to select random astronomical coordinates in the sky, and I then search for an astronomical object near those coordinates and talk about what makes that object so interesting to astronomers. Now I will run the random number generator. The random number generator has printed a note stating that all air travel restrictions imposed 2 hours ago by the Federal Aviation Administration have been lifted. That's good to know, especially since the random number generator is not located in the United States. The generator has also returned the coordinates of 1 hour, 3 minutes, 55.0 seconds right ascension, and plus 21 degrees, 53 minutes, 6 seconds declination. This episode's object, which is a dwarf galaxy that looks like a slightly overdense elliptical region of stars in the constellation Pisces, goes by a couple of different names. When it is mentioned in any popular astronomy references, it is called the Pisces Galaxy or Pisces Dwarf Galaxy, or something like that. But professional astronomers generally call it LGS3. The letters LGS stand for Local Group Suspected, which indicates that this was initially identified as only possibly located within the local group, the group of galaxies containing the Milky Way and the Andromeda Galaxy. However, LGS3 seems to have been confirmed as part of the local group a few decades ago, so the name LGS3 seems to be a bit outdated. By the way, I also found information for objects named LGS 1, 2, 4, and 5. LGS 1 and 4 are definitely located outside the local group. LGS 2 is just a weird reflection nebula in our galaxy and not a nearby dwarf galaxy. And while it is technically in the local group, it doesn't really count if it's not a dwarf galaxy. And no one seems to have tried looking at LGS 5 since the 1970s, so in all seriousness, I'm not even certain that LGS 5 exists. Anyway, let's get back to LGS 3. Valentina E. Karashentseva has been credited with discovering this galaxy in 1976, but the paper describing the discovery is not online, so I can't say anything about how it was discovered. What I can say is that this was an era where people were identifying nearby dwarf galaxies by either making photographic plates of the sky or by staring for hours at photographic plates provided by the Palomar Sky Survey. The first technique would require luck, while the second technique would require huge amounts of commitment and eye drops. The galaxy is located at a distance of about 2.1 million light-years, or 650 kiloparsecs, and seems to be close to both the Andromeda Galaxy and Messier 33, which means that it could be orbiting either of them, but most likely not both. One of the interesting things about LGS3 is that it is one of the very few galaxies in the sky that is actually moving towards the Milky Way rather than moving away because of the expansion of the universe. This is because LGS3 is within the gravitationally bound local group, and because the local group is gravitationally bound, the galaxies within it are not going to move away from each other as the universe expands. Instead, it is likely that some of the galaxies, or at least the Milky Way and the Andromeda Galaxy, will eventually merge together, although that will take billions of years. Smaller galaxies like LGS3 tend to eventually fall into large galaxies like the Milky Way, the Andromeda Galaxy, and Messier 33, so it could merge into one of the larger galaxies at some point, but that will take billions of years. Since LGS3 is close enough that it is possible to identify many of the individual stars within the galaxy, and since dwarf galaxies like LGS3 contain stars that are a little different from what we see in the Milky Way, people have spent a lot of time making detailed observations of the stars within this specific dwarf galaxy. Among other things, People have studied the current stellar population to infer what has happened in the past in terms of star formation. I found a 2011 paper by Sebastian L. Hidalgo et al. That gave such a good description of this that I'm just going to summarize that paper's results right now. So to begin with, LGS3 would have formed shortly after the Big Bang out of some slightly extra-dense region of dark matter and gas. That gas and dark matter would have gravitationally pulled in other gas and dark matter from the nearby area, and the end-falling gas specifically would provide the material for forming new stars. In fact, it looks like the majority of stars in LGS3 formed during a time period starting 11.7 billion years ago that ran for about 1.4 billion years. After that, the rate at which stars formed dropped dramatically, although it did not stop entirely. This is in contrast to spiral galaxies like the Milky Way, where stars have been forming at a relatively steady state for billions of years. The slowdown in star formation in LGS3 billions of years ago could have occurred in part because a lot of the newly formed stars were the types of very large stars that have short lifespans and that explode to supernovae, and those supernovae could have driven a lot of the gas needed to create stars out of the dwarf galaxy. However, the energy expected from these supernovae would be inadequate from stopping gas from collapsing into stars in LGS3. So Hidalgo et al. Proposed that the gas within LGS3 may have also been partly ionized by the relatively intense ultraviolet light from both the stars forming within the galaxy itself, but also from other nearby protogalaxies where lots of stars were forming at the same time. And when interstellar gas gets ionized, it also stops gravitationally collapsing to form stars. This result may explain why not only LGS3, but also many other similar dwarf galaxies did not continue to form stars at the same rapid rate at which they formed stars when the universe was much younger. In contrast, the gas in much larger protogalaxies in the early universe, like spiral galaxies, may have been much more resistant to being fully ionized, and so the gas in those galaxies could continue to be used to form stars, and that would explain why today, spiral galaxies like the Milky Way are able to form stars at a much higher rate than dwarf galaxies like LGS3. As a final note, it's worth pointing out that LGS3 might be gravitationally interacting with a blob of intergalactic hydrogen gas and dark matter moving at relatively high velocity compared to the dwarf. This blob could provide a lot of extra material for forming stars if it fell into LGS3, but it looks much more likely that the blob is just going to continue speeding past the dwarf galaxy instead of falling into it. The location on the Earth's surface corresponding to the position of LGS3 in the sky is part of the Tibesti Mountains, which sit in northwestern Chad in the middle of the Sahara Desert. This mountain range is volcanic, and it even features a few notable extinct volcanoes. However, given both the remoteness of the location and the political instability within Chad and the surrounding area, it would be difficult to get to these mountains. Although these mountains are technically easier to reach than the dwarf galaxy LGS3. The website for this podcast is www.randomastronomicalobject.com. You can visit the website to read information about the astronomical objects, view images of those astronomical objects, look up additional reference information, and send me random feedback. The audio was recorded and edited by George Bendo. The music is Immersion by Sasha Endy, and the sound effects are from the Freesounds Project at www.freesounds.org. Thanks for listening.